Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, we'll give you our official picks for week one of the college football season later on this afternoon. Plus, how impactful will that Georgia-Clemson game be tomorrow night? It's the game of the year. And we'll continue to break it down this afternoon. But, you know, when you have, like, one side of the political party or a political race on the radio, you have to give equal time to the other side, at least offer. You can't be one-sided in the radio industry. You're supposed to have the people on from both sides of that political race. So similar here, we're talking plenty of Clemson, but South Carolina also begins their season tomorrow. And while we know they'll handle the business against Eastern Illinois tomorrow, they'll give them the business. Instead, it's more of a preview or a look ahead. What can we expect from this Gamecock team this year? Joining us now is Ben Portnoy, who covers the Gamecocks for the state. Follow him on Twitter at bportnoy15. He's with us now. Ben, good afternoon. How are you?
Luke, what's going on? Appreciate you having me.
Yeah, appreciate the time. I know you've been on the beat now for about 6 months. How's it been so far for you here in South Carolina covering the Gamecocks?
It's been awesome. Really excited about it, having a lot of fun. Definitely settling in Columbia and getting to know everyone around the program and all that. But it's been fun working with a new staff. And, you know, Shane Beamer's been brought a lot of energy, to say the least. So it's been a fun few months.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You know, I don't know what other coaches you have covered or dealt with in the past, but Shane certainly seems to be, at least before the game start, he seems to be somewhat easier to deal with from a media perspective.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's the thing that's been really fun for us as reporters, is that Shane's been really great about access, is pretty forthcoming as far as, you know, transparency and all those things. And you know, in the past, it came from covering Mississippi State for a couple of years. So I covered Joe Moorhead, covered Mike Leach, and Tom Allen at Indiana before that. So it's been, it's definitely different. But Shane's one of these guys that I think is about as real as it gets, which I think for a lot of us is really refreshing. And, you know, we've had a lot of fun with it.
Yeah, I can imagine. So I think for the fans, for everyone, it's certainly refreshing. Let's talk about this team. Of course, the story this week was about the quarterback, the grad assistant stepping in to start tomorrow. It's grabby. I get it. People had fun. They were making fun of South Carolina on the internet all week. People from the national media or other states, college football fans. I get it. But for you, covering this program, knowing Luke Doty's hurt, these are their options. Were you surprised at all by that announcement earlier this week?
I don't think so. I mean, I think you could pretty well read the tea leaves, even without talking to anyone, that this was probably how this was going to end up. You felt pretty confident that, like, you know, I mean, let's be real, right? You don't add a guy like Zeb Nolan to this roster at the time that you did 2-3 weeks out from the opener without probably the intention of playing him to some degree. And that's not necessarily a knock on South Carolina's other quarterbacks. It's just that, you know, that's the hand that South Carolina was dealt right now. And I think that we all were kind of, you know, expected that this was going to be the case. You know, it's obviously a pretty crazy story, and we've had a lot of fun with it. And, it's been really interesting to track for sure, but I think this was pretty well how we all expected this to end.
You mentioned the other quarterbacks. Does this say anything about that depth that Zeb, look, maybe he's just the most talented, but he comes in off of the sidelines and within a couple of weeks is named the starter. Should that be concerning at all for the rest of that quarterback room, for the other depth at that position?
Yeah, I mean, shoot. I mean, I think it was concerning even before that, is that, you know, you only had 3 scholarship quarterbacks. And at one point, I guess in what, late December, or early January, you only had 1 scholarship quarterback on the roster, and Luke Doty after Ryan Linsky transferred. So quarterback depth has been an issue a little bit. And we've heard a little bit that there's a chance that South Carolina could take 2 quarterbacks in its 2022 class and, you know, maybe try to bolster that a little bit. But it's definitely been a learning curve and a little bit of a process for these guys. And I think that, you know, if you're South Carolina, like, I think Shane Beamer was joking about it the other day, is that, you know, when he was at Oklahoma, they had like 7 scholarship quarterbacks at a time. And, you know, South Carolina was working with 3 with Luke Doty hurt. So, or 2 really, with Luke Doty being hurt and before he added Zeb. So it's a really, I don't know that it's necessarily an indictment on their ability, but I think that it's, you know, it doesn't exactly inspire confidence.
For tomorrow's game against Eastern Illinois, I think it's one that everybody could just skip. But do you imagine we'll see, you know, all the quarterbacks? Do you think we'll get a look at tomorrow? Is this Zeb's deal tomorrow, or should we expect to see all these guys get some playing time tomorrow?
My understanding is that we'll definitely see Zeb for the bulk, but I wouldn't be surprised if Jason Brown gets some reps, the FCS transfer from St. Francis in Pennsylvania. We all kind of thought that this might be his job before Zeb was brought in into the program, or I should say brought onto the roster. He was in the program with GA, but, you know, I think that we'll see both of them. I guess there's a chance we could see Colton Gauthier, a freshman. You know, obviously, I think the thought is that you could want to redshirt him if you can. Is this one of those games that he plays in? I'm not sure, but I think there's a decent chance we'll see at least 2 or 3 quarterbacks on Saturday.
Talking with Ben Portnoy, who covers the Gamecocks for the state, do you have any idea the timeline at this point for Luke Doty, when maybe we could expect to see him return?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty safe bet to assume that we'll see Luke Doty. I think the hope is at least that you know, you'd see him against East Carolina next week. If that's not the case, then we'll see. I mean, if you're South Carolina, do you roll with Zeb Nolan going into Georgia in week 3? I mean, do you wait with Luke Doty and wait for him to get, you know, all the way back, say, you know, week 4 against the Kentucky team that you feel like, you know, that's a game that you really, really need if you want to actually try and chase down a bowl game, which, you know, that's a whole other conversation, whether South Carolina can make a bowl game this year or not. But I think that, you know, realistically, South Carolina would hope that Luke Doty is back for next week for East Carolina. If he's not, it would presumably be Georgia.
Moving away from the quarterback position, what do you think is the biggest strength of the South Carolina team as we're set to head into the start of the season tomorrow?
Yeah, I think it's the defensive line. I mean, you know, when you look at it, there's guys like Jordan Birch and Zach Pickens, your former 5-star recruit. J.J. Anagbare is going to be – Kingsley Anagbare is going to be you know, a first-round pick probably this coming spring in the NFL draft. And then you got other guys like Aaron Sterling, who's drawn a lot of attention. Rick Sandage is hurt right now, and we're not quite sure when he's going to be back healthy. Shane Beamer said he's the one guy who's dealing with a pretty serious injury, and, you know, that's TBD whether he, you know, comes back or plays this year. You know, we don't know that yet. But if he's healthy, you know, that's another guy. Jabari Ellis, Keem Green, he's a transfer from Nebraska. I mean, there's a lot of depth. There's a lot of guys who can make plays. And, you know, honestly, the most interesting thing about it is just seeing how they're going to rotate these guys. I mean, you got a ton of bodies that can make plays on that defensive front. And really, I would say stacks up as one of the better defensive fronts in the conference.
Yeah, I think the Gamecocks will be good in the trenches. If that's the strength, the defensive line, what about the reverse of that? What do you think is the biggest concern or biggest weakness for this team as we head into the year?
I would say the secondary, and I don't know how much of it a concern it'll be after a couple of weeks, but I think the biggest question we have is just that you've got a lot of newcomers. I mean, Shane Beamer, to his credit, went out and got guys, you know, signed 9 transfers over the offseason. I mean, that's a lot of changeover and a lot of guys to bring in addition to a recruiting class. But, you know, South Carolina lost some really important pieces in J.C. Horn and Israel Mukwamu. I mean, I'm definitely not – this isn't the first time South Carolina's hearing that, but – you know, I think that if you're South Carolina, you had to go out and get some guys. Tyrese Ross at safety, Carlin Slatel, who's a transfer from Assumption College in Massachusetts, and Division II levels come in, and he's played a lot of nickel. Marcellus Dials, a JUCO guy, who's come in and has really taken on a really big role in the secondary. And then you've got other guys who, you know, we just haven't seen a lot from. Darius Rush, RJ Roderick's been around a long time and will play safety again. And then you got Cam Smith at corner, but, you know, Cam's dealing with an injury in his foot right now. So whether he's fully healthy and ready to go on Saturday is TBD as well. So I think it's interesting. I think that, you know, when you look at this secondary, it's not so much that you don't know that these guys, it's not so much that it's not talented. I think it's just, we don't know what we're going to get, right? Like when you sign a transfer, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. You know, that's kind of just the natural progression of these things. But I think that the secondary is a legitimate question mark. I'm not quite sure how much depth you're going to have there. I think that it's possible that the secondary might have a lot of trouble this season. And you know, we're going to find out maybe not a ton, but a little bit more come Saturday.
Would that be your biggest question mark for this team? You know, certain areas, you know, they're not going to be very good here. Other areas, they'll be pretty good here. But like you said, with the defensive backs, we'll find out as the season goes along. Would that be your biggest question mark for this team as we head into the year?
I think so. I mean, I think that, like, offensively, you could argue that the receivers maybe, you know, Jalen Brooks and Josh Mann are both guys that have had up-and-down careers at South Carolina. I mean, you know, Jalen Brooks didn't get eligible till halfway through last year with some transfer stuff. And you know, Josh Mann is a four-star recruit who just about everyone in the country wanted. And South Carolina landed him, and he's been, you know, largely, you know, ineffective or in a reserve role and just hasn't really done a lot. And, you know, the expectation is both those guys are going to be starters this year. And I guess DeKarrion Joyner falls in that category as well, but, you know, Charleston guy. So, but I think that when you look at it, I think the secondary is the biggest question mark. I think that offensively, South Carolina has enough at the running back position to be fine and to make things work to some degree. The question is in the secondary. Like, if South Carolina's offense isn't clicking, can they actually stop anyone? And I'm not sure. And especially the way we look at, you know, SEC offense, it's the way they've changed over the years, right? Like, you're going to see a lot of passes and a lot of man coverage and a lot of, you know, a lot of pass-heavy offenses in what you're going to see this year. So can South Carolina keep up with that? I'm not sure.
Couple last things for Ben Portnoy, who covers the Gamecocks for the state. Follow him on Twitter at bportnoy15 and read his work online. Before we let you go, I do have to ask you, what would be your win-loss prediction this year? What do you expect out of this Gamecock team from a wins standpoint here in 2021?
Yeah, I think that if I had to peg it, I feel pretty good saying this team goes 4-8. I think there's enough games on the schedule that they could, you know, overachieve. I think the floor is probably 2 or 3. I think the ceiling is probably 6. So I'll stick right in the middle. I think 4-8. I think they can beat Eastern Illinois. I think they beat East Carolina next week, and then you got Troy a couple weeks down the road and Vanderbilt after that. So I think that, you know, those are the four wins that I pick out in my head. You still got a couple of games on the ledger that you feel like they could win. You know, you're at Tennessee, home against Kentucky, at Missouri, you know, home against Auburn, an Auburn team that, frankly, I think is going to have a lot of trouble this year. So, you know, there's enough games out there that you think maybe they could sneak a little bit past 4, but I feel pretty safe with 4-8.
And how would you measure success in year one for Shane Beamer? Because it may not even be in wins and losses for you. Maybe there's something you just want to see. What would make this a successful first year for Shane Beamer?
Yeah, you know, that's the thing is, when you look at Shane Beamer and how upbeat and positive he is, I think that if you're South Carolina, you just need to avoid being utterly terrible this year, right? Like, you can't afford to go 1-11 or 2-10 or something like that and lose to East Carolina week 2. Like, those are things that just can't happen. Now, if they can avoid that and you win 4 games and you stay competitive in some of these other games and maybe you win one, maybe you don't, but you're playing hard. I mean, like, a good example I'd think of is look at Arkansas last year, right? I think they finished, 3-7 on the year? But that was a team that was probably better than their record, played really hard, played a lot of people really tough, and hung around. I think that's progress, because at that point, if you're a head coach or a first-year head coach, you're still selling a vision at that point. You know, you're not saying, hey, you know, the rails of our, you know, we've already fallen off the rails already. So if you're South Carolina, you win the games you probably should. You hang around, maybe you beat someone you're not supposed to. You know, don't get, you know, murdered when you run into Georgia or Clemson or anything like that, and just kind of stay competitive. And I think that's enough for Shane Beamer to say, hey, you know, it's year one. We're still building, and this thing's going to take time. And I think anyone who has realistic expectations knows that this is a 2 or 3 year deal where South Carolina's got to flip this roster and you know, bring guys in and reshape it a little bit. So if you're talking about success, I think it's just a matter of South Carolina being, you know, competitive against better teams and beating the teams they should.
We'll let you get out of here on the most important question of the day. You came from Mississippi. I'm looking at a list here where Mississippi is ranked as the 34th best state for barbecue. South Carolina is ranked as number 7. Are you a big barbecue guy?
A big barbecue guy, and I got to say, that's really low on Mississippi. Mississippi's got some real good barbecue, so I'm probably a little biased, but that seems a little low.
Okay, so better barbecue, Mississippi or South Carolina so far?
Man, that's a tough one. I got to say Mississippi. I've had one of the best barbecues in my life in Mississippi. Now, to be fair, I'm still making the rounds, so I probably haven't made it to enough spots to get really good barbecue in South Carolina, but I'm growing. I'm expanding my list a little bit, so sooner or later, I might have a better answer for you.
All right. We'll check in with you during the season. If you're ever down here in Charleston, we'll treat you to some barbecue. He's Ben Portnoy on Twitter at BPortnoy15. He covers the Gamecocks for the state. Ben, appreciate all the time, and enjoy the start of another football season.
Yeah, Lou, appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
Hey, pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Ben Portnoy covers the Gamecocks. Read his work online. Follow him on Twitter at BPortnoy15, but maybe you don't want to anymore after that claim. I don't know if he's making himself any new friends here, claiming Mississippi's got the better barbecue than South Carolina. I'm looking at this list from Zippia, so you know it's legitimate. If Zippia.com says it, and they put Mississippi at number 34 and South Carolina at number 7. In terms of ribs search volume, I love this. South Carolina 74, Mississippi 72, so not a big difference in the search for ribs, for how often people Google about ribs, apparently. And in terms of restaurant per capita rank, barbecue restaurants, South Carolina's number 5, Mississippi's 13. So certainly more options here in this state. But Ben may go at Mississippi. Luke Doty, as he said, he believes we could expect Luke Doty next week against East Carolina. And we got the news earlier this week. Those are my thoughts that, look, this game's fine. You could play without a quarterback tomorrow and be just fine against Eastern Illinois. And so if Doty is ready to return, say, next Saturday, even if he was ready to return tomorrow, I wouldn't even put him out there. I would say take the extra week. We don't need you against Eastern Illinois. And as long as you get Doty back for East Carolina, then it's good. Then it doesn't make a difference. It doesn't matter. Let Shane Beamer go play quarterback tomorrow. You'll be just fine. All right, if you want to take somebody off the sidelines. Get Luke Doty back for next week because that East Carolina game on the road will be a little bit tougher. South Carolina should still win. I would say even without Luke Doty, that's a game you should win. But that's going to be much tougher next week than tomorrow against Eastern Illinois. You can get through this game just fine without your starting quarterback. So you hope to get him back next week and then move forward and try to get some wins. And what I find really interesting about this defense is what Ben said, that the strength is the defensive line and the biggest weakness of the team may be the defensive backs, which is very interesting to me. Because that's always a debate. Would you rather have a really good defensive line, right? Would you rather have a really good pass rush or the defensive backs to guard, to defend against the pass? Which would you prefer? And I think the analytical crowd, because we know analytics have played such a big role nowadays, I believe the analytics actually tell you defensive backs are more valuable. I disagree. I say defensive line, because you could have the best defensive backs in the world. But if you can't pressure the quarterback and he's got 10 seconds to throw, I don't care if you're going up against 4 Hall of Famers. Eventually, someone will get open enough where you could try to throw them the ball. Whereas, vice versa, you have a terrible defensive backfield. Okay, but if the quarterback has to get rid of it in 3 seconds every time because you're so good at pressuring, it's going to make that defensive backfield look a lot better. Right? They won't have to guard as long. They could play a little. They could play closer. Or, you know, you give a little bit of a cushion. You know he's going to have to get rid of it quickly and just come up, make the tackle, give up a couple of yards, but no big plays. I think the defensive line is very important. More important than defensive backs. I think a defensive line, I think a great pass rusher, like just say Michael Strahan, I think is more valuable to a defense than, say, a Darrell Revis. In fact, Strahan, what won the Super Bowl for the Giants both years against the Patriots? Their defensive line. Whereas, as good as Darrell Revis was, he never had an impact like that. I don't even think he ever won a Super Bowl. I know he was on the Patriots, but I don't think they won when he was there. And that's just one example off the top of my head, comparing a defensive lineman to a defensive back, but you get the idea. I think defensive line is more important. But people always debate that. What would you rather have, a really good secondary or a really good pass rush? Give me the pass rush. And at least the Gamecocks have that, because I think their secondary is pretty bad. I think it could be certainly one of the worst, maybe the worst in the SEC. But it'll be helped out by a really good defensive line, which would be really one of the better ones towards the top half in the SEC for South Carolina. So that'll be interesting to see how that plays out defensively. Will they be able to guard? No, probably not a whole lot, but they'll be able to rush the passer, and that should help. And they kick off their season tomorrow against Eastern Illinois. Don't even waste your time. Sit at home instead and watch Georgia and Clemson and all the other great games tomorrow instead of that snooze fest. Appreciate the time from Ben. Coming up, in regards to the NFL, the season begins next Thursday. Which divisions should we expect new winners in? Maybe we could even do this with college football next segment as well. But which division should have new winners in 2021? We'll get to that next. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
On a morning from a Bogart movie, in a country where they turn back time, you go strolling through the crowd, contemplating a crime.
Don't bother asking for an explanation. She'll just tell you that she came in the year of the cat.
Coming up, which division leaders could be different this year in the NFL? The Mar Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Appreciate the time. Last segment from Ben Portnoy. If you ever miss anything from the show, such as his breakdown of the Gamecocks heading into the 2021 season, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. Those podcasts are also available on our website at charlestonsportsradio.com and through our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Great song from Al Stewart as we're playing theme songs for tomorrow's Clemson-Georgia game. Cat-related, Tiger-related, Georgia-related. That's one line I've always tucked away in the back of my head, and I've never used it yet. I keep forgetting to get it into a broadcast. But running like a the watercolors in rain that he says in that song, right? And you got a Citadel team that loves to run all over everybody. Like a watercolor in the rain, that's what he says. Running like a watercolor in the rain. I'm going to use it at some point this year as a reference to Al Stewart, and you'll know why when you hear it in a Citadel broadcast. I'm a little sore today, and not vocally from all the talking, but I don't know what it is. I stand up when I broadcast the games. I don't like to sit down, right? It's football. It's high energy. I like to stand. And I don't know. I don't know if I was just standing awkwardly or I wasn't hunched over. I feel like I played in the game last night. I'm a little sore this morning. I don't know if it was the drive, but it was good to have football back last night. Unfortunately, the Citadel lost. I was exiting the press box last night and almost got trampled by Scott Eisberg on the way to go do, I don't know, a live shot or make it to a press conference. I don't know. But it was good to see all the local media members out there. Somewhat normal, you know, full capacity. They didn't have a full stadium, but they were allowed to. The media was all there in the press box and actually played football with good fans and start of a year that felt normal. Just the Citadel did not win. What I don't get is masks were supposed to be required in the press box. I'm like, I have no problem, whatever. But masks weren't required for the fans. So what's the difference? Why do I have to wear a mask in the press box when we're all in our own rooms as opposed to the fans? That I did not get. But it was a fun night last night up in Conway. Great facilities because I've never been there before. And the baseball stadium is right next to the football stadium. And I know they just renovated the football stadium. Very nice facilities. Nice campus. Bit of a pain to get to the parking, but very nice. I got to see the whole campus. Very nice campus. And they got themselves quite a program being built there at Coastal Carolina right now. Hey, for this great college football weekend, you know, take a load off and get some good food for the games this weekend and have Home Team Barbecue cater your Labor Day holiday or your college football weekend. Let them do the work this holiday. You're supposed to be taking time off from laboring. They can handle smoked wings, ribs, pulled pork, sides, and more. You can view the full menu online at hometeambarbecue.com. They also offer Game Changer Mix. You just need to add the rum. Give them 24 hours notice. Call them or email catering at hometeambarbecue.com. And, you know, take the weekend off. That's the whole idea. And let Home Team Barbecue do the work. They can cater your Labor Day celebrations this weekend. I'll get to my division winners in the NFL this year. We're going to preview all the NFL teams next week. We ran through all the Power 5 conferences this week leading up to week one. Well, next week we won't be on the air for Labor Day. But Tuesday through Friday, we'll go through two divisions per day, and I'll preview all of the NFL divisions heading into the NFL week one next weekend. But you can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500 to give us a call. Let's go to the phones. Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. First of all, the Home Team Barbecue, make sure you give your body a 24-hour notice before you do the game changers, okay? Just a little advice. It's just the game changer does change your mind, not just the game that you're watching, okay? So please, listeners, look at the game changer. Think about it 24 hours in advance, okay?
All right. Sounds good.
As a courtesy to you, because you were busy working last night,
yeah.
I will do a synopsis of last night's football game by two big boy football teams.
Sure.
Even though I never knew there were so many Minnesota Gopher fans that were texting me and whatever. One of them being Bobby Hart and told me, "Do you hear the crickets?" You know, because we were losing 14-10 at halftime. But then our graduate assistant quarterback, he was a redshirt, but I call him a graduate assistant quarterback, came out of his shell, and he's got the best wide receivers in college football, three running backs. Two of them scored touchdowns. The Ohio State Buckeyes kicked Minnesota's butt. Now, our defense is a little weak. The defensive backs, I think they're squatting flies in the down there when they're hitting the football and whatever. But we will be around. Please remember that. We're not playing, you know, we're not playing teams like Eastern Illinois, and then they play East Carolina, and I think they play East Delaware the week after, and East Troy. I mean, we don't play. We play the full state of Minnesota was the team we played yesterday. Okay, now done with that. Jimmy the Greek will come and make his prediction for tonight. It will be take North Carolina, give the 5.5 points. You have the best quarterback in college football, and the quarterback can do it all. And this guy is good. How do you like that?
I like it. I like UNC, and I'm a big Sam Howell guy. If you want to get a team, though, you're right, you try to get them week one. Virginia Tech will have them coming into their building. I think UNC wins tonight, but I do know there's a lot of people that believe they could be on upset alert or take Virginia Tech.
Well, let me say this. Virginia Tech does not have a quarterback. They lost one of their quarterbacks. They played with two of them last year. They're a little weak on their defense, too. That was always their strong suit. Did a little bit of my homework. That's why I'm saying North Carolina, who's ranked in the top 10, they will be around. They will be the ACC team when Clemson loses on Saturday. My Georgia Bulldogs will be there. Now, that's Jimmy the Pollock for the weekend. I'm leaking into Saturday a little bit. How do you like that?
I like it a lot. And we'll see what happens tonight. Congratulations to your Ohio State pulling out that victory, and appreciate it, Jim. Over the course of the year, I think UNC will certainly be the better team than Virginia Tech. But it is week one. You get them at home. UNC's having to replace some big pieces on offense. I understand why people like that as a potential upset. But as I said this afternoon, I think UNC does win the game. I think it'll be tough. I think it'll be close. I think UNC wins. And I do think UNC is a pretty legitimate team. I think they are one of the better teams in the country, and I'm a big Sam Howell guy. But week one, this is when you want them. At home, at your place, Friday night, place will be packed, I hope, at Lane Stadium. That's what I thought last night about Coastal, and that was far from the case. But I think tonight it'll be a little bit different in Blacksburg. I think it will be packed. I think it will be crazy. It'll be rowdy. And we'll see if Virginia Tech can surprise UNC. All right, quickly, because I teased this, who could be different divisional winners in the NFL this year? And then briefly, maybe we'll run through college football as well. And by the way, I'll give you my official picks later on this afternoon after we got Jim's for tonight and somewhat tomorrow. When it comes to the NFL, the Bills won the AFC East. You know, every year we usually have half of the playoff teams change. So you could theorize that about half of the division winners should change from one year to the next. The Bills won the East last year. The Steelers won the North. Titans won the South, Chiefs won the West in the AFC. How many of those could we see change this year? If I had to pick in the AFC, I'm only picking one, and that's the North. Could the Patriots or the Dolphins win the AFC East? Yeah, I could see it, but I'm most confident in the Buffalo Bills running it back and winning that division once again. They did overachieve a little bit last year based off of the metrics, and also based off of the metrics, were somewhat fortunate to even get out of the first round against the Colts, but I like Buffalo to win that division again. Once again, they have the best quarterback in the division as of today. In the South, it's not a very good division. The Texans are a mess. Maybe the Jags won't be as good as I thought in year one. They won only one game last year. And I just don't trust Carson Wentz and the Colts. I think the entire roster is good, but they've had some injuries and some tough luck this summer. Also, Carson Wentz, I just don't trust. I think he's the third best quarterback in that division. So I think the Titans win the division once again almost by default. I don't think the Titans will be a great team. It may only take 10 wins, but I do think they win the division once again. And in the West, of course, you go with Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs, even if I do believe the Chargers will be a wild card team. But it's that AFC North where the Steelers won the division a year ago. Now I think we're much lower on the Steelers than we should be, but that division is one of the toughest in football. It produced three playoff teams last year, so I'll take my chances that we have a new champion this year. Whether it's the Browns or the Ravens, they're both probably in a better spot than Pittsburgh heading into this season. I think we'll have a different division champ in the AFC North. In the NFC, the Washington football team won the East. The Packers won the North. The Saints, you may not recall because the Buccaneers won the Super Bowl, but it was the Saints who won the South. And then in the West, it was the Rams that won the West. I think we'll have two different champions in the NFC. The NFC East is the biggest toss-up. And I've been on the Eagles bandwagon now, or I should say, not the Eagles. I think the Eagles finished last. I've been on the Giants bandwagon. Now, I am a little more concerned about the Giants because they've had some real injury issues. The offensive line doesn't look like it's any better this year. Evan Ingram will probably start the year on the IR. Galladay's banged up. We'll see when Barkley actually returns to 100%. So I have some concerns around the Giants, but I'm still sticking with New York to win that division. So I think the NFC East will have a different winner. In the NFC North, I'm rolling with the Packers once again. I think the Vikings will be improved, but not good enough to win a division. The Bears and the Lions, I think, will have losing seasons. The Packers win the North. In the NFC South, I'm rolling with the Buccaneers. The Saints did win the division last year, and the Buccaneers were a wild card team. But this season, without Jameis Winston, or I should say without Drew Brees and now Jameis Winston, and then it's a very serious issue, but to relate it to football, the Saints are going to play without a home stadium for the first, at least the first half of the year because of that terrible hurricane that just rolled through New Orleans. And we hope for the best for everybody that's dealing with the aftermath of that in Louisiana. But how it relates to the NFL, well, the Saints, they're not going to play a home game until at least week 8, they're saying, at the earliest. So that only makes it more difficult. They'll play on the road in neutral sites, and they won't be at home, and they won't be in the comfort of their own beds, and they're going to have to try to figure it out as they go. That makes it tougher. Plus, the Buccaneers are the best team in the NFC. Once again, they're getting everybody back from that Super Bowl team. And then in the West, I think the Rams do win, but that's another one of those toss-up divisions where it's the best division in football. The Niners will be better this year. You can never count out Russell Wilson. Hopefully the Cardinals take a step forward in year 3. But I do think the Rams with Matt Stafford, that puts them certainly over the edge. They're one of the best teams in the NFC as well, and they'll win the West. I'm sure I'll be off because it's usually about half the teams that change, but I'm going to say 3 out of the 8 divisions will have new winners this year. The NFL is so unpredictable that I imagine there'll be more changes than that, but there's 3 that I can forecast now that I think will certainly be different. The other 5, I feel pretty good about those teams. The Packers, the Chiefs, the Bills even once again, but one of those will slip up and surprise us, maybe have a down year, right? Maybe the Titans don't win that division. Maybe it is, in fact, the Colts with Carson Wentz. Maybe the Dolphins do win the division this year and the Bills struggle a little bit. There'll be another surprise somewhere along the way, but those are the 3 changes I see coming to the NFL. And when it comes to college football, I give Clemson the best chance of winning the division once or their conference once again. No surprise there. And I also I will give Alabama the second best chance, even with Georgia and Texas A&M. And then I would probably give Oklahoma the third best chance to run it back. And I would put Ohio State then next. I give Ohio State the smallest chance in that Big Ten because I do think that will be a tough conference this year, as we kind of saw last night. And in the Pac-12, Oregon won the conference last year. I probably should put them higher on the list, but just like the playoff committee, we kind of forget about the Pac-12 anyways. Coming up, how impactful could this Georgia-Clemson game truly be tomorrow night? We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. This is a great song. Playing theme songs for tomorrow's Clemson-Georgia game. Songs about dogs, tigers, Georgia. We don't have enough time this segment. We'll get to it later on this afternoon. The impact this game could truly have. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I've been saying all week long, I don't think it'll be as impactful to the playoff as many others believe. We'll get to that later on, plus my official picks next hour as well. I do think in this Georgia-Clemson game, though, it almost sounds like the opposite of what you should do, but if I'm Georgia with that great defensive line against the Clemson offensive line, I want to try to keep DJ in the pocket. Now, DJ isn't maybe the same runner as Trevor Lawrence was, but for a young quarterback, right, you want to get those quarterbacks, or oftentimes you'd like to get those quarterbacks on the move. Roll them out, get them away from that pressure, and also you, in that way you shorten the field and you minimize their reads. They only have to worry about half the field. They look at their number one wide receiver over there. It makes it easier than having to go through your progressions, reading the pocket, your pocket awareness and everything. You want to get these guys on the move, especially when you know they're going to be pressured. So if I'm Georgia, defensively, I want A, Clemson to try to beat us on the ground as opposed to through the air, right? I would worry more about those wide receivers than their running backs here on week one. And B, try to keep DJ actually in the pocket because I think he'll be more comfortable if he's rolled out, if he's on the move. He throws well in transition. That's not a problem for him. But keep him in the pocket. Try to pressure him, right? Collapse that pocket on him. Obviously, for all quarterbacks, the toughest pressure to handle is right up the middle. So come right through those A gaps and try to rush him up the center of the field and keep him in that pocket and try to disrupt things and make Clemson try to beat you on the ground. I think Will Shipley, by the end of this year, will be a star as a freshman. But I wouldn't count on him too much in week one. I think he gets better as the season moves along. So at least to start the year for tomorrow, I have some concerns or questions about this Clemson rushing attack. I think it improves by year's end. But tomorrow, I look at this Clemson team, right, with the quarterback, the wide receivers, especially that offensive line we're concerned about, make them try to beat you on the ground. Force them to try to run it. Keep DJ in the pocket. Don't let him get out of the pocket, move around, try to make some plays with his legs. Keep him there and try to pressure him. And disrupt Clemson's entire game plan with the pressure from your defensive line and their offensive line. But at the same time, on the flip side, we talk so much about that matchup. I don't know if Georgia is that much better off either. They, too, have lost two starters on that line from a year ago and have to go up against a great defensive line like the one they're going to face from Clemson. So Clemson has the opportunity to also really disrupt things for Georgia offensively, what they want to do with JT Daniels. It's very cliche, but it's still oftentimes true. These games are still won in the trenches, and I think that will be the case tomorrow. Potentially the two best defensive lines in the country and two offensive lines that are still a little bit maybe of a work in progress to begin the year. I think that will be the most important part of the game. We'll get to the impact this game could potentially have next hour, plus my picks next hour. We'll also catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery next hour as well. But we have to hit another timeout because when we come back, we'll be joined by somebody who has an interesting and a good announcement to make about someone who will join us next that you can hear on our sister station moving forward on the weekends. We'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Giving my official picks next hour for week one of the college football season. As you've been hearing with the songs throughout the afternoon, we're getting ready for Clemson and Georgia tomorrow night. The game of the year being played in game one, or I should say week one, tomorrow night. I still haven't seen a number for South Carolina and their game against Eastern Illinois. But that's not even worth trying to predict how much they'll beat them by. It's not even worth watching the game, quite frankly. Skip that one and watch all the other great games going on tomorrow. Now, I thought the Citadel could keep it a little bit closer last night with Coastal Carolina. They were at one point a 36-point underdog. I think they ended up closing somewhere around 33.5. And obviously, that game did not go as planned for the Citadel. Coastal Carolina did end up covering the spread. And one of our P1 listeners sent me something last night because after the Citadel got blown out, saying to try to ease the pain, right? Sent me a photo about my favorite lunch as a kid. And it's one of those memes, and it says, I turn hot dog water into ice cubes for guests that I don't like. And I saw this, and it reminded me, as I've shared on the show before, growing up in the summers when I wasn't in school, I would always have boiled hot dogs and watch American Gladiators every day as I waited for my buddies to come over to go play wiffle ball or something. But I have to admit, I would actually use the same hot dog water. I don't know if this is nasty or not, People always talk about that. Oh, hot dog water. But if you're cooking the hot dogs, if you're boiling them in the same water anyways, and that's how I used to cook the hot dogs when I was a kid. I wasn't firing up the grill. I was just boiling hot dogs. And I would just, I figured, why dump out the water and fill up the pot again tomorrow? I'm just going to keep it there. And then I would boil the same water. In fact, it probably adds more flavor. Right? You got the hot dog water from the previous hot dogs. That only adds more hot dog flavor to the hot dogs I'm boiling. And then I would sit there and I would eat them and I'd watch my American Gladiators and I didn't have a care in the world. Oh, what a time it was on a flashback Friday. What a time to be alive. Chomping on hot dogs from nasty old days old hot dog water and watching American Gladiators.
We just had a caller say that the line for South Carolina and Eastern Illinois currently is 42.5.
Oh, goodness. 42.5. Never gamble. We were supposed to have Lee Sterling on the show yesterday, and then our phones didn't work. The phones went down yesterday. So, unfortunately, we'll have to wait till next week to catch up with Lee. And I wanted to ask him about that because he does this for a living. He's a professional gambler. And I was curious because he gives us the games he wants to talk about each week when he joins the show, and he always has a local focus. Clemson, South Carolina, you know, the Falcons, the Panthers. But when he sent me the list of games, he did not have the Gamecocks on there, which I wasn't surprised. They're playing Eastern Illinois. It's such a hard game to predict. That's what I wanted to ask him, though. Like, how often as a professional gambler, how often do you find value in trying to bet those types of games? South Carolina against Eastern Illinois, the number's 42.5. If I had to pick, that's so many points. I think I would take Eastern Illinois. But I do believe that if South Carolina wanted to, I think they could win by 50. We watched that Eastern Illinois. Bobby and I watched that Eastern Illinois team last week. I mean, they're bad for an FCS school. They've won two games the last 3 years. Now they're going up against an SEC team? Are you kidding? So that's a ton of points. I think I would just have to take Eastern Illinois because it's 42.5. I would certainly would never gamble on that. That line is way too large. I try to avoid any lines that are really more than 10 or 11 or at least more than 14. I don't like bet. That's a lot of points. I don't like betting. Like Alabama is like a 19-point favorite tomorrow. I think they win by more than 19, but that's just a lot to bet on. I think I'd stay away from that game. But I do think Alabama will cover. So I usually, if it's over like two touchdowns, I don't even think, I'm staying away. That's my rule. But you 42.5, I'm definitely staying away. But South Carolina, that's how ugly of a game will be. South Carolina will blow them out tomorrow. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. Let's go to the phones. Billy is with us. Billy, what's going on? How are you?
Good. How you doing, Luke?
Good.
First of all, you know, being a Gamecock fan, you do not go with the points on that spread. I've done it a couple of times over the years, and every time I've done the point spread, they've never covered. So if you all be guaranteed losing money, go for that bet because there's no way. I don't see them covering that. That's way too much for any team.
Yeah, a ton of points. Take your chances and take the underdog there.
Exactly. Another thing, see, Jim didn't want to mention the other schedule because, you know, I mean, they do play Alcorn this year, which I don't know where they come from exactly. They also play Tulsa, Maryland. So, I mean, even though he says they don't play, don't play any passies, well, I would consider those passies too.
Who's that? Ohio State? Is that what you said?
Yeah. They got Alcorn, they got Maryland, and they got Tulsa.
Right.
So what's the difference?
Yeah, not great. I will say, though, the one game they do have, which is just like South Carolina playing Clemson, that's their tough game. Ohio State is playing Oregon next week, so that's a good one. But, yeah, the other games are pretty cupcake.
Now, one other thing, I know what you were talking about earlier about the Georgia-Clemson game and how the last couple of years Clemson's played in the playoffs and a couple of teams have run up the scores late in the game. I kind of could see that with Georgia, too, depending on what offense shows up and what defense shows up with Clemson. I think it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, but I just think Georgia might have the edge as far as being stronger. And then the game does mean more to Clemson than does Georgia just because of the strength of schedule. And I also understand that's why they're wanting to join the SEC in the first place, because fans can finally say they got a schedule that they play people every week instead of cupcakes they play every year. I'll talk to you later. Bye.
Appreciate it, Billy. Enjoy week one of college football. I think it's a fourth quarter game tomorrow. I think this really is a great game. Oftentimes in college football, look, we don't get games like this in the regular season, and then the times we do, it always gets built up and it usually lets us down. The one I referenced earlier, I remember a couple of years ago, was a similar idea, not quite as big as this one, but Alabama and Miami, if I remember correctly. I don't know, maybe 5 years ago when Miami was supposed to have a good year, and it was week one. And maybe it wasn't Miami because they're obviously playing. It's Alabama-Miami this week. Who am I thinking of? Miami and somebody else. There was a game a couple years ago, similar. It was built up to be this big, and it was a blowout. And well, that was a waste of time. I really think this is a great game. It'll play out as it's supposed to on paper, or as Vegas is predicting. I think it'll be nip and tuck. I don't think anybody, you know, jumps up by more than, say, 10. It'll be a single-digit game throughout, and then it'll come down to the fourth quarter, whoever can make the plays. And I think it's going to be one of those great games. I'll give you my official pick next hour, but I think it is going to be a great game to start the year. Now, we were supposed to be joined by a guest this segment. We were trying to help them out. We were trying to do their business for them and help promote their new show. We got stood up. So what can I tell you? Instead, I'll tell you what I know.
Well, actually, we were just told that there was a problem with our guest line, and so they may try to call back during the next hour.
Oh, okay. Well, so we got the phones fixed, but apparently not all the phone lines fixed. All right, so I'll cut them some slack. I won't give them a hard time. In the meantime, let me tell you that the Golf Shop Radio Show will begin airing on The Zone, our sister station, tomorrow and every Saturday moving forward from 8 a.m. until 10 a.m. And you could check out their website to get more information to see what you should come to expect from this show, the Golf Shop Radio Show. Just search thegolfshopshow.com, but it'll be on The Zone, 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. every Saturday moving forward. And we'll see if we can catch up with one of the hosts next hour to get even more details and maybe talk a little golf here on a Football Friday. Now, this is a great song. We've had some good songs this afternoon, but this one's fantastic. I always share the story. I was filling in this time slot when I wasn't normally in this time slot, and we were doing the best rain songs, and this was one that I didn't even know at the time, and this was one that was brought up, and I have fallen in love with this song ever since. As we get ready for Clemson and Georgia. The game's being played in Charlotte, so it could be a rainy night in Georgia tomorrow. That won't matter. In fact, if Georgia loses, it may feel like such a thing for Georgia fans. But what a great song to take us out here in hour two. Coming up, we'll catch up with a member of the Charleston Battery. I'll also give you my official picks for week one of the college football season. Hour three next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. It seems like it's raining.